Okay, we're back for episode 293. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well. The apparently the not too much fanfare attention. Joe Biden officially signed, I guess, the document that ended the COVID emergency. COVID-19 pandemic ended on Monday. This past Monday, President Joe Biden signed a bipartisan congressional resolution to bring it to a close after 3 years. I guess that's what it takes. Weeks before it was set to expire alongside a separate public health emergency, the national emergency allowed the government to take sweeping steps to respond to the virus and support the country's economic health and welfare systems. Some of the emergency measures have already been successfully wound down, while others are still being phased out. The public health emergency underpins tough immigration restrictions on the U.S.-Mexican border. It's set to expire on May 11th. White House issued an online statement Monday saying Biden had signed the measure behind closed doors after having publicly opposed the resolution, though not to point out the issue of not to the point of issuing a veto, rather. More than 197 Democrats now voted against it. So 197 think it, there's still emergency. I guess the simple majority said there's not an emergency. Last month, as the measure passed the House, passed the Senate 68-23. Biden let the lawmakers know he would sign it. So there you go. It is officially over. I think there is another health emergency that went into effect on January 11th, which is supposed to expire in May 2. So I guess this is going to wind down a lot of money and supposed aid and that sort of stuff to the states. And
yeah, it's really bizarre, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you know, you had the crescendo of this thing was that it was going to be with us forever. You certainly can recall the statements by, you know, at one time they were saying that this would lead to that there was never going to be a return to normalcy, that, you know, the disease was so deadly and so contagious, we were going to have permanent changes in social behavior.
Yeah, no more shaking hands, right?
Right. I mean, just as an example. Well, I can tell you, you know, just having walked the beach in Santa Barbara, that people returned 100% normalcy without any aid from the government. I mean, everyone just, you know, basically, I think a critical mass simply became unafraid of the virus. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, this was, you know, paralleled with the concern over the vaccine, which, you know, is an issue, I think, that, you know, the independent media won hands down. So, you know, it just now disappears. Let's just hope that the memory of the public about how absurd and unnecessary all of the restrictions on our freedoms were remains and is vivid, so that if they try the stunt again, which, you know, they will, that there'll be more fight back from the very beginning.
Yeah, the idea, of course, masks. That was always a charade. So that was like a symbol of the pandemic. It was necessary for people to wear masks to get people psychologically, in step with it, to prove compliance. You know, people remember going to the stores, being yelled at for not wearing masks. It's below your nose, it's not put on right. Then, of course, they never did give any instructions how to use the mask or what type of mask. It was always just face covering. So it never made any sense. Same thing with the, with the 6 feet apart, you know, schools closing down. They actually closed down in the spring. You couldn't go to like public parks or playgrounds, trails, beaches, right? You saw that in California. People were given ticketed or arrested for just trying to go to the beach. There was one, I remember a couple people kayaking who were pursued.
There's a famous guy who was like paddle boarding he was like stand-up surfing. And they actually sent out a, Harbor Patrol boat to corral him and arrest him. I think the first person ever arrested for surfing that I can think of. So, you know, the whole thing was just, why did they do it? Well, you know, it was to get the vaccine to be taken. The side effects have actually not come on as strongly as I thought they would at at the onset, but they are still there. There's still all of the statistics show that there's been some permanent damage to the immune system. No one really can say, you know, will it get better or worse from here? But they've established the precedent of being able to mandate injecting us with things which do genetic operations inside of us. That's really a dangerous thing out of the whole pandemic. And of course, they've been able to destroy small businesses. It really catastrophic here in California how much retail took a hit, but the oligarchic businesses flourished. You know?
Yeah, it created a lot of millionaires and billionaires, of course, at a huge expense of the middle class, though. You had to spend billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions to create a new billionaire, 100 and millionaire class in California.
Yeah.
No. So, and also, a lot of the budget, like California, didn't California like balance its budget on COVID relief aid or something?
It did. It was our major industry. I mean, literally. We had so much money coming into it.
And of course, we're seeing a lot of the headache. The hangover from all this is, of course, the raging inflation, galloping inflation we're experiencing, and a lot of the trouble that the dollar is having now. Of course, the other things like the sanctions imposed, the military, the sort of weaponization of the dollar and the Western banking system is leading to the very de-dollarization of the global economy. Brought up by Ukraine and yet another crisis they created right after when COVID's winding down. But obviously this began under Trump, all that COVID relief aid going out, paying people not to work, of course, just shelling money out. Most of it going to huge corporations. One thing is clear is just how this emergency was declared, of course. 1,000 days, 1,025, I think it was in effect. Is that essentially the states and various corporations and even churches were bribed to comply with the lockdowns, you know, and all these other measures. And now all that funny money has created a lot of inflation.
Well, inflation and mistrust of the dollar. This feels to me like the kind of the beginning of the winding down of the dollar in general. I mean, we discussed a couple of weeks ago that, you know, we have the reserve currency status, which is, static in the sense that the money just sits there in the banks of the treasuries of the nations who store their wealth there. But in terms of the dynamic relationship of the dollar to the world, that is not static. That can flip overnight. All you need is just enough people to not want to do business in the dollar. And you'll start getting some concern. Some will start to sell their treasuries. Others will try to do, currency transactions and other currencies in the dollar. And then it could just become a torrent within a month or something. There's nothing that holds up the dollar. We've talked about this 100 times. It's just a religious system. It's faith. And it can just go away that quickly. And it feels like when you read all of the steps of de-dollarization that are going on, that we actually are in the process of that. And, you know, just would note that people need to at least think about that to some extent of, you know, what they can do to prepare for it. It's, unfortunately, there's really not a lot that the average American can do. The average American lives paycheck to paycheck and has very little savings. What can you say? Move to a safer community if you can, because if you get into a de-dollarization flood, you're not going to have any kind of safety at all in the big cities. So you have to be out of there.
Yeah, and obviously the decisions made, the monetary policy is not being made on behalf of the American people. The Federal Reserve System the people who run it aren't patriotic Americans.
They don't have the middle class, at heart. In fact, one hopes that that is actually, a fact that is becoming clearer and clearer to more and more people, that the government is a secret society. It's organized on some principle we don't understand, and it is malevolent toward the common person. Mm-hmm. The lockdown just proved it. You know, the disease was fake to a large extent. Certainly wasn't the lethality that you know they claim. None of the social control aspects had any, you know, meaning in terms of preventing the disease. And then the vaccine was absolute garbage. So why would you do that if you had any concern whatsoever for humanity?
Isn't it still on the schedule, and isn't still officially approved for children?
Sure, absolutely. Even though the you know the side effects are simply through the roof, and the efficacy is just not there for anything. So, you know, malevolence is afoot. The COVID phenomenon, the whole thing that Biden signed away last Monday, is just one big lesson about the nature of our ruling class. They're evil.
Yeah, and it's, of course, the emergency is what enabled Biden to be in the White House to begin with, because it was illegally, voting was changed in several states, in the mail-in voting. This was carried out by governors and secretaries of state. So obviously, you know, the Constitution gives, you know, the decision how votes are determined for the electors for the president are determined by the legislatures. And several states
Do you think they'll ever give voting back to the people? In other words, they have all of the fake machines now in control of them. Do you think they'll ever release that, even though there's no real reason to have?
Well, they fortified the democracy, as I say, right? Their idea, their democracy. You know, I don't know. It depends on whether or not those in power decide, you know, it's time for a change of the guard, so to speak. And to, you know, it's interesting what they're going to do with Biden. You know, this leak with the regarding Ukraine.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's been blamed on this guy. He's a 21-year-old airman, Air National Guard, Massachusetts Air National Guard. 21 years old with a top secret security clearance, apparently. Apparently, he's the one that put this on the internet, 4chan or something, or was it some sort of social media? Jack Teixeira, I think that's how you pronounce that, was arrested. It's kind of funny. He's sitting on his deck, like, looks like he's doing homework or something. And all of a sudden, these armored, the army shows up to arrest him. He's in his shorts and a t-shirt or something. And you know, they're like putting 30 guns at him. Okay, I got the point. But apparently they're saying he leaked it. Interesting about this point about the story is that apparently the Washington Post and New York Times helped identify the leaker for the government. That's kind of a new thing, right, with journalists. Back in the old days, didn't they go to court with the Pentagon Papers, New York Times and Washington Post, right, to publish the story?
Yeah, in the old days. Also, they certainly were pointing fingers at who the suspect was long before they arrested him. I was amazed that the guy, you know, wasn't, you know, didn't try to skip town or something. He was obviously being, you know, fingered for the, having done it. And of course, if in fact it's real, he would have known he did it. But I hate to say it. I just think it's theatrical. I think that
it was an intentional leak. I mean, he was fed the material.
It's just, this is just being done to basically set the American people up for a transition in the Ukraine. You know, they've been giving the meme that, you know, Ukraine is winning and we just have to keep the sanctions up and, you know, and things will go good and things are going good, but that's just not going to hold together. I don't think it's going to hold together for 2 weeks. I think that when Bakhmut gives up the ghost, and just to digress, I don't know if you're following that, but it's just like a gigantic snuff film. It's just hideous. They've got the Ukrainians trapped in this cauldron. They can't get out of it because the exits are now all under fire control, as they say, by the Russians. And I mean, they have thermobaric bombs that launch on these things with GPS precision. They have pictures of this road out of Bakhmut, and there's like 50 cars just strewn. It looks like a hurricane came through there. I mean, there's just no way of getting out of that. So they've got somewhere, they don't really know how many are in there, somewhere between, you know, 10, maybe even 20,000 Ukrainians are trapped in there. And they're going to have to try to surrender. But I'll give you a little, I don't know how to characterize this fact, but gruesome. A lot of them evidently are foreign mercenaries. And these individuals, there's a question as to whether or not they can legally surrender. You see what I mean? In other words, there is this, fact that they are actually not protected by any surrendering agreement that the Russians might sign with the Ukrainians. And if they're not Ukrainian citizens, then they are illegal private people who are waging war against the Russian army, and that is met by death. So now you have a question of, well, they don't, that's why perhaps some of these guys just don't want to surrender. They'd rather just try to fight down to the end. This next, I would say, I'm giving it 10 days till the end. And it'll be interesting to see what happens at that point. There's some theories that they will actually try, a kind of a ceasefire at that point. But I don't think so. I think that the war is going to go on. And I would just note that Zelensky met with Mateusz Morawiecki, the Polish prime minister, last week. I don't know if you caught that. But according to the rumors, the idea that was floated is that the border between Poland and Ukraine would disappear. Ukraine would essentially become part of Poland, which would give it, as part of Poland, the status of being a NATO member, so that the war could just go on indefinitely.
Well, can a NATO member expand its territory and still be a member of NATO?
Gray area. But the thing is, you have to just bear in mind that the Polish army wouldn't do any better against the Russians than the Ukrainians did. All this guy would be doing, incidentally, I mean, who is Morawiecki? Oddly enough, Tim, he has a Jewish background. You look into this guy and he talks about his Jewish aunts. No one really talks about to what percentage of his, genes are Jewish, but he certainly talks a lot about his Jewish background. And of course, he is a World Economic Forum member. Mm-hmm. So with that combination, he looks pretty Zelensky-like to me. And if I was in Poland, I would really look at this evaporation of the Ukraine into Poland with a cynical eye, because, they might just be, well, we've killed everyone in the Ukraine now, we can just start the process with Poland, I mean, it literally might be that cynical. So in any case, if this guy, Morawiecki, I can't pronounce it, he is an absolute hawk. He's just like Zelensky. And you've got to attack Russia. We need to fight them. He's been trying to get involved in the Ukrainian fight since it began. And so now he might actually, have laid the groundwork for, the entry of a new army into the thing. And if that's the case, we're just going to be treated to all of the, European young males being genocided. One after another. The stats in the Ukraine, the Ukrainian kind of numbers minister was asked the other day about this. And he said, well, they're pretty bad, but we're not going to give them out until the conflict is over.
Well, the leaks that suggested there was like a 4-1 or 5-1 casualties.
Oh, yeah, I think it's far worse than that. I think they probably have got about, if I had to guess, I'd say around 500,000 fatalities and over a million casualties, injuries. The nation of the Ukraine is finished. It's over. It will not come back. It just too much damage. Too many people have gone. There's really no way for that nation to set up a kind of welfare state with its resources for all of the people who are going to need.
Well, that's where BlackRock steps in. Another.
This is right. So you actually, I don't know if you recall, but you really predicted this.
Larry Fink, by the way, also board member of the World Economic Forum. So.
Yeah, you were saying that this would be the conclusion of the war, where you know the war was over when BlackRock had taken over all of the rest of Ukraine. So. I mean, Zelensky is being called.
It's ironic because claim in the West by the Biden administration was that Ukraine's borders were sacrosanct.
Yeah.
Even however in dispute they are, they're sacrosanct. And now it's going to end with Zelensky ceding huge swaths of territory to Poland.
Well, giving up the whole nation. I mean, he's literally
okay.
What could end up? I mean, if you look at the proposals that have been floated, they're rumors, but you know these are being floated by high informed people. The Zelensky realizing that it's over for the Ukraine, the only way he can continue to slaughter Europeans would be to maneuver like this.
Well, at the same time, Seymour Hersh publishes an article on Substack. He used to be an important journalist, Seymour Hersh. He used to cover New York Times when he broke that Zelensky had and his pals had embezzled as much as $400 million. It's a sort of diesel fuel thing, and they're actually buying fuel from Russia or something.
Yeah, well, no, that's just
which is I didn't surprise me because even during World War II, Standard Oil through its subsidiaries were providing chemicals to the German Luftwaffe so it could produce aviation fuel. Right?
Let me say something. This is such low-level gangsterism. Yeah. I think if someone went in there, they would find $400 million for cocaine and whores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just disgusting. There's no oversight. There never can be because it's just going to reveal, so much.
Well, Biden's family's been enriched by all the Ukraine corruption.
Of course. I mean, they've been in there. So the poor Ukrainians, they lost control of the political system, and which is now just a parasite sucking the last bit of blood out of the animal that it's attached to, and now it's going to move on to Poland. It looks
well. What was exposed with these documents was the corruption, of course, the death toll. That's the real death toll of the war, how it's favoring Russia, but the fact that apparently U.S. Special forces are engaged, which is Russia, U.S. directly at war with Russia, despite the fact there's no congressional declaration. Of course, what that can grow into, develop a full-scale war. And of course, this is illegal. And this is another thing where the press focuses on the leaker as opposed to what information the leaker leaked. And of course, that makes him a whistleblower if he's exposing corruption. One of the White House spokesperson said, "Well, who was it again?" Said something to the effect that this information has no place in the public domain. John Kirby,
right?
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby on Monday said, without confirming the validity of the other documents, this information has no business in the public domain. It has no business, if you don't mind me saying, on the pages or front pages of newspapers or on television. It is not intended for public consumption. It should not be out there. So American people should not know what's actually going on in the Ukraine. That's the position of the Biden administration.
Yeah. There's actually now sad and pitiful, pathetic, some pushback by the Ukrainians. There's actually a movement to try to create legal process to demobilize, in other words, to force Zelensky to settle. Good luck. They have lost control of the political system. It will never be returned to them. But it's at least they are trying that. You have this spring offensive that they've been talking about. I mean, God help us. Let us hope that somehow this can be prevented, because it'll just be a meat grinder. The Ukrainians will probably, they may march all the way to the Black Sea, but none of them will march back.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian, top-down standoff technology has really proven to be superior to NATO's, and they are a nation that has still the capacity for industry. I mean, NATO, I mean, Europe and the U.S., I mean, we have financing as our major industry. So what can we do? Brian Berletic, who's just absolutely wonderful, because, he was a munitions individual, worked for was a U.S. Marine, and that's what he did. So he's got all of these numbers and data, and he can say, look, they just, there isn't, the munitions are going to run out. There are being a very, very low level. The Russians are increasing. So the artillery difference is going to get bigger and bigger. Anyone who's fighting against the Russians will simply be slaughtered all the faster. And the fact is that they knew this. When they started this war, they absolutely knew that, because they can count them and they can check the rate of production, that at a certain point in time, NATO's stockpile would be just where they are now, that they would be running out. They couldn't really resupply. And they could also, they certainly should have known, and I'm sure they did, that the Russian industry could obviously, accelerate their production of munitions. So they were perfectly aware that we would get to the moment we are right now, where the Ukraine is literally being evaporated. 60% of the population is gone. 10% are dead, and the others cannot possibly organize a country, under those conditions. And so the situation with Poland, with Morawiecki, I actually was expecting it. This actually is a little different than I thought it was going to be. I thought they were just going to make Ukraine a NATO member in a dramatic, 11th hour kind of thing, and then just full throttle put NATO troops in there. This is a little more obtuse. It's a little more complicated, but it's the same thing. You get rid of the Ukraine, you keep the slaughter of the Europeans going, and BlackRock can own both the Ukraine and Poland in 2 years.
Yeah, at a very, very discounted price too.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
So interesting, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman, defended the suspected leaker, saying he's white, Christian, and anti-war, which makes him an enemy of the Biden regime.
Yeah.
She said he told the truth about the troops being on the ground in Ukraine and a lot more. So she's treating him, so the congresswoman, Green, is treating him like a whistleblower, whereas the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, and all the networks are treating him like the way they do it now, they support the regime. They don't support the leaker, even though he's providing important information to the American people, to know what's really going on in their name in the Ukraine.
Yeah, don't you think this is just a repeat of Holodomor 1, where the Ukrainians were losing, the numbers are over 10 million died, and the New York Times were giving story after story about how well things were going. Mm-hmm. And then, Walter Duranty, their reporter, was given the Pulitzer Prize. And then after the fact, the propaganda of the nation, the New York Times, they said, well, we had to support communism. We didn't really know what we were saying. It wasn't really the truth, but, we had to support the we didn't want socialism to get a bad name. Well, this is the same thing, right? I mean, this poor kid, if this is legit, it was just set up. The fact that he is a legitimate whistleblower or has brought legitimate whistleblowing items to the public is irrelevant. The media is at this point a horrendous and exposed automaton of the political class.
When Snowden exposed James Clapper for being a liar and also committing perjury, he's the one that's targeted, not James Clapper, even though James Clapper broke the law when he testified it. Under oath, yeah. Lied about the surveillance.
Yep.
WikiLeaks guy.
Yeah, Assange, Julian Assange.
Yeah. Yeah. Exposing all the corruption in Iraq, and Bradley Manning, right? He's another one who released all that information, and they went after him after exposing war crimes and other things that being committed by the U.S. military in Iraq. Again, it's like no one protects, although there are whistleblower protection laws, no one seems to follow them when whistleblowers do come out and expose these things. Was it John Caracal, CIA, same thing, exposed all the torture stuff. He went to jail for his whistleblowing.
Yeah, I mean, the power of the intimidation that they create with the incarceration really has to be broken. Mm-hmm. Public just needs to stand up to this. You can see the inch by inch totalitarian mechanism that's being onset with these things. You know, it all works as a big lump of intimidation. Remember all the politicians screaming at us about anti-vaxxers being evil? Think about that. Mm-hmm. Well, the public has just been bludgeoned over the last 3 years, you know, to obey, right? That's just the message, you know? And now they can use this guy as, you know, as another whipping post to just put freedom on and just give it a good thrashing and just scare everybody. You know, it would be great if colonels, people like outside of the secret society control who have access to information, there should just be a flood of this stuff. And I think that what the kid put out was, you know, they may have just given him kind of a limited hangout, perhaps. If he's legit, I think he was set up, because I just think the information is a limited hangout. I think it would be great if there was like 10 real disclosures, right? Just to shock the public into understanding how corrupt the Ukrainian government, how malevolent the relationship is with America. You know, I mean, there has to be somewhere some real data, you know, of how the incredible mortality count for the Ukrainians. I don't think they can release it because I think it would just shock Europeans. I think that's, you know, they want to genocide us without alerting us, you know, to the fact that that's going on.
We were entertained this week by it was legislators down in Tennessee, the Tennessee Three.
Yeah.
It turns out that two of the three were expelled by the Tennessee legislature by a supermajority vote. One was spared by one vote. All denied their committee assignments. They had apparently let a mob into the Tennessee state legislature, the Capitol building there, supposedly on behalf of gun control. This was in the wake of the massacre down there on part of by that the tranny who shot up, killed six people in that Christian school. Audrey Hall was her name? I forget.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And Chris, she allegedly identified as a male, whatever. Then it also became a gun control issue. but anyway, these three legislatures, there was Gloria Johnson, the lady, then Justin Jones and Justin Pearson. I think one of them had a bullhorn or something when the microphone cut off. And they apparently they let protesters in, and it wasn't very peaceful. And so as punishment for this, they were a move was made to expel them again. Two of them, Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, were expelled. Again, Representative Gloria Johnson was spared by one vote. She stayed. She's the 60-year-old white lady, apparently made a racial issue out of it. And then apparently, I think Justin Jones was reinstated by the committee or something, or a board, citizens board or something. Although that, I think that's technically illegal too. But again, it was within the law. If you disrupt and you break the rules of the chamber, you can be you can face all a series of punishment, including expulsion, which they did. They broke the rules. They incited a riot, an insurrection, if you will. Oddly enough, the Biden administration supported the three insurrectionists. they called it a peaceful protest. Apparently, more than 75% voted to expel Jones and Pearson, and they're calling it anti-democratic. Called it fascism. They don't like being held accountable for their actions, I suppose.
I'm just going to say, this is, you can imagine why they want to like nip this in the bud, because if it's okay to bring a bullhorn in, well, what if two people do, or three, or four?
Yes.
What kind of?
Well, someone has said if you support a position, submit a bill. That's how it's done. But these people are, you know, rabble rousers, demagogues, troublemakers, rioters. So I think Justin Jones was involved in the 2020 riots down there, which actually involved assaulting motorists and climbing up on a marked police car, doing it damage. I think a warrant was issued for his arrest, and now he's in the legislature. You know, so that this is the caliber that I guess the people down there, at least some of the people down there, seem fit to elect to the legislature. Although Republicans control a supermajority down there, but they're playing the same game, race card. It's racism, right? It's all racism. It was funny. One of them, I think it was Pearson, who's apparently had a transformation into a black minister of civil rights character. Tucker Carlson did a thing. They did a videotape of him, I think, running for student government, and he's just a nice boy. Perfect diction.
It was literally the funniest video. I mean, first of all, you know, the people who listen to our show don't have the benefit of knowing you as I do, and knowing that you are, even though you are the sage kind of wise person, you're actually like the funniest person on the planet when you're not like being recorded. But anyway, you sent me the tape and a comment, which I won't repeat, but the tape made me laugh for like 5 minutes. I just don't know how anybody can think this is real American politics and not a skit from a Dave Chappelle show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is just incredible. I hope you're able to play it, because if you can, what you'll hear is the first voice that this individual uses is the most kind of like polished middle-class English spoken imaginable, right? I mean, it's literally like he's trying to pass a diction class, you know, in a university. It's just flawless. It's, mm-hmm. He speaks so well. And then I don't want to explode the surprise, but he somehow makes a transition when he gets into politics.
Yes, he grows an afro. I guess those are back in style again.
Yeah.
And the cadence changes. He's doing the Martin Luther King thing. I have a dream that one day, you know, it's the, you know, democracy, you know, it's like, yeah. You know, but that's just how fake everything is, right? These people it doesn't matter, I guess, because they're reelect him, that he can, again, it doesn't matter what he does. If he's not thrown in prison, they'll reelect him, because he's just one of these, political race hustlers, demagogues, who, you know, but it just shows you, depends on what's he trying to achieve, what he's trying to do in life. It's going to shape his public persona, how he acts. And he really is an actor here. But yeah, let me play this if I can do this here. This is courtesy Tucker Carlson. Let's do this.
One of them is a man called Justin Pearson. Pearson has been in the news recently for helping to facilitate an insurrection at the Tennessee State House. You may have seen him. But you may not know what Justin Pearson was like before his transition. Back in 2016, Justin Pearson was an earnest young student at Bowdoin, the whitest college in the whitest state in America, a place that costs $60,000 a year for no obvious reason. A rich kid's school. Here's what Justin Pearson looked like then as he ran for president of student government.
I'm Justin J. Pearson, and I'm running for president of BSG. There are a few reasons that we're running this campaign this year. One has to do with representation. How can we represent all voices in a conversation? I want to bring together different voices, dissenting voices, voices that may be more liberal or more conservative, in order that we can reach a point of sort of the radical middle, where conversation and dialogue happens and growth happens. Join the People's Pearson campaign, and let's chart ourselves to a better future.
I want to bring everyone together, said Justin Pearson, in a voice that if you closed your eyes, you could easily imagine coming from a suburban orthodontist. Justin Pearson wasn't white. That's probably how he got into Bowdoin in the first place. But he did a fantastic impression of it. What a nice young man, as he considered the apprenticeship program at Citibank. That was the old Justin Pearson before his transition. Here he is now on the floor of the Tennessee State House.
All hope seemed to be lost. Representatives were thrown out of the state house. Democracy seemed to be at its end. Seemed like the NRA and gun lobbyists might win. But oh, that was good news for us. I don't know how long this Saturday in the state of Tennessee might last. But oh, we have good news, folks. We've got good news that Sunday always comes.
It was just a hilarious transformation. And you know, Tim, you know the people who should really be ticked off about this? are Black Americans, because that kid is mocking them, isn't he? When he transitions from his little sophomore voice to the angry Black ghetto male voice.
Yeah, I guess that's something that's, again, I guess that's something that Blacks share with whites. Their politicians are mocking them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously just a theatrical role the kid is playing. It's not, I mean, I'm calling him a kid. He's like 28 or something. But yeah. I mean, it's not real. You don't have the college preparatory, you know, voice in one hand and then just switch it this way. So he's just mocking the vernacular of like inner city Black people.
Or that's the civil rights, you know, that's the civil rights, you know, narrative, or we expect the civil rights, you know, character to be that, you know, the Baptist preacher yelling and outrage, moral outrage, and, you know, oppressed.
The voice,
you know,
that they're trying to intimidate the white middle class with. That is the purpose of that voice. And that voice, and so he faked the first voice and then he faked the second voice. I mean, there's nothing real about this character.
One is just to be loud and not engaged in any dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, any Socratic approach to these things, just to be loud, be very loud and outraged and affect that voice. And, you know, it's all very affected and scripted, and it's all BS. And that's one thing that people have started to sort of just publicly say, I'm not going to listen to this stuff. This is nonsense. You're acting. It's BS. You misbehaved. Now you're being punished. Accept your punishment. You know, you're a fraud. And that, which actually does, I mean, if anything, he is typical of the whole civil rights establishment. You know, it's been way that since the 1960s. There was never good, you know, despite what people say, and it didn't go bad. It was always bad. It was always bought off and controlled. And that was sort of the image that was created by the media in the 1950s and 60s, was the Baptist preacher who was controlled by Jewish and Rockefeller money. If you do the real history of this thing, of the civil rights movement, you know, eyes on the prize. It's the Edmund Pettus Bridge and these things. And it's just lore. It's, again, it's just, but it has no, very little to do with reality, is to say that, you know, or it really
they couldn't have, there's no way they could have had Black leaders in the protest era who were real and who were reflecting the interests of the African-American community. Because they could never have gotten the Great Society Program's laws passed if that was the leadership, mm-hmm. right? They had to be fake.
Well, even the protests in the 60s were all part of the Highlander Folk School. They were all trained. It was like an NGO thing. It was all trained. Exactly. These events were staged. It was
color revolution.
Yeah.
It was the first color revolution, and it was completely fake. And, well, I mean, primarily fake, and the individuals who we saw as media characters were fake. And the whole point, in my opinion, is to create enough hysteria so that no one would be able, everyone would be so intimidated that when the Great Society programs were passed, no one would stand up and go, wait a second, aren't we just going to destroy the Black community, the Black family with these laws? Aren't these laws just designed in a kind of malevolent way? You know, Moynihan didn't really point that out, but he certainly noted that it was going to end up badly. But if there was real Black leadership, they would have said, wait a second, we've got to, like, let's do this incrementally. Let's try this in one little tiny area for a couple of years and see what happens. I mean, you know, they were intimidated. The real, I think, that there probably were legitimate, Black intellectuals who wanted to have political change in America. They didn't get a place at the table because what was going on was the Great Society program. They wanted to wreck the Black culture and the Black family, and they did. And now you have this charming expression, the baby daddy, my baby daddy, as opposed mm-hmm. to father. Because there's no point in knowing the word father, because there aren't any families left. They have destroyed the Black family in the same way they have destroyed the Ukraine, And they kind of did it with the, in an odd way, kind of the same kind of sophistry.
Well, you had the same thing. You have, of course, the irony of it all, the hypocrisy. The Biden, Kamala Harris goes down there and meets with them, praising the Biden administration, invites them to the White House, and says that, you know, their protests were in support of democracy when they were rioting in this, in the state house legislature. Well, I thought doing this was like insurrection. These are the same people who are viciously prosecuting people who just happened to walk through the Congress on January 6th and walk through the Capitol building. I mean, it's like
Tennessee's guys disrupted an actual legislative proceeding.
Yes, they actually had physical contact with legislatures. Yeah,
they legislatures stopped democracy.
Yeah,
I mean, the 1-6 guys, they're all of the there was no political activity going on whatsoever, you know. So it was a far more egregious insurrection, if you want to call it that, though it wasn't obviously an insurrection, but nevertheless, you know, they're heroized, and no one has even, you know, mentioned that the poor 1-6 devils who are incarcerated are still rotting in their cells.
Yeah, and again, hypocrisy, the irony of it all. And wait, this is an insurrection, right? Based on your definition.
Yeah.
You know, but so they're simply deprived of their committee postings, and then they're expelled from their privileged position. They're entrusted to represent the people of Tennessee or the people in their districts, but they break the law, they break the rules, and therefore they shouldn't be members of that body. But I guess that's white supremacy, I guess. Legislative process, duly submitting bills and following the rules and when to speak, when not to speak. Of course, if you tell a black man not to speak, that's racism, even though he's speaking out of turn. And that's another thing, you know.
The woke guys have really, they're dramatically accelerating the attack on the senses and on the intellect. You know, the whole thing with the transgender, I think, plays into this, obviously, you know, because they're inverting reality, you know, by making these guys who are breaking up, a legislative proceeding with a bullhorn into, you know, somehow being advocates for democracy.
Yeah, they're disrupting a democratic procedure. And then,
right. Yeah. It's like Biden talking about our tradition of the war heroes, the transgender war heroes.
Yes.
I mean, these are just, you know, kind of like double bind insanity making, you know, statements. They're so absurd that.
Yeah. Did Audie Murphy become Audrey Murphy? I never heard of that happening. So.
You got me with that one. God darn.
For those younger listeners, Audie Murphy was a hero of World War II hero that made movies of it. Yeah. He became an actor, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
The whole thing is an act. But no, Audie was a real war hero. And it's just that, like, Biden's comment, it has no referent. I mean,
based in reality. It's just another break from reality. It had nothing to do with reality.
Oh, gosh, Joe, you know, you're right. I failed to honor the many transgender war heroes that we've experienced here in this country. Can you give me a name of the few, and I will try to make amends. I will go and write them congratulations and thank you letters or something, you know. But there isn't one. There's no. Give me a break. There's not one. I'm sure there are people who had transgender ideas, you know, perhaps, you know, maybe 0.1% or something, but they didn't actually become.
Well, it's really, you're talking about inversion.
Their statements
are a complete inversion of reality or nothing to do with reality. A good example was after the, you had that massacre in Tennessee at the Christian school, you had the Biden administration come out and say, our hearts go out to the transgender community who are under assault. What are you talking about? That's not happening. And B, what happened here was a tranny killing people because she's a crazy, deranged person, deranged by your rhetoric and your policies, and you're promoting this stuff. She's, you know, in a way, she is a victim of you, in a way, not the way that you said, you know, during. And the protesters were saying there are 7 victims, as if she's one of the victims, even though she's the one carrying out the massacre. She was killed by police, so the massacre would stop. So there would only be 6 victims, fortunately, you know. But the another example of this would be Riley Gaines was speaking out at San Francisco State University. About this whole idea of trans males, trans females, inundating women's sports programs. You know, I guess she lost out to that guy who's pretending to be a girl, who apparently has a girlfriend who he's intimate with. So it's really a mockery of it. So they're destroying women's sports programs. But she was apparently giving an address or a lecture at San Francisco State University, and she was attacked by a bunch of deranged protesters. You know, trans women, our women, blah, 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 trans rights, human rights. And they chased her out of the school. Then they trapped her in a room for several hours, which is kidnapping. That's illegal. You can't do that. Threatening her. I think they actually went so far as to threaten to demand a ransom to let her leave peacefully. But the police, the security had to escort her out. She was punched by some guy, some dude in a dress. And this is apparently, and the administration of the school came out in support of the protesters and called it peaceful, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was just gonna, I thought this would be interesting. I have a friend who's a professor at local university. I won't mention it. But anyway, he's passed along they have all of this, professional training that they do, which is now just Soviet style indoctrination. But they have this thing called reimagining instruction and the student experience. Now, this is actually, one of the things that they have to do some of this stuff. But listen to this and just imagine what this could be like. It's called RISE R&R, Reimagining Roles and Relationships. As our institution, our faculty, and our students continue to change, the Office of Teaching and Learning invites instructors to join a structured 4-week interactive institute where we will collectively reimagine roles and relationships in a changing context. During each of the institute's 4 weeks, participants will focus deeply on one aspect of an undergraduate course that they can teach through the lens of equity and inclusion. Now, can you imagine what this must be like for these professors to go in there and to have to go through this Soviet style indoctrination?
Yeah, struggle session, yeah.
I mean, it's insane. I mean,
there's a lot of time and resources spent on that stuff. And this is all this whole industry now. And these are a bunch of grifters. If they're not deranged, they're grifters. That's what it is. They're just cashing in on it. The way you handle it is kind of the way that you saw Elon Musk handle the BBC reporter, just challenge their assertions. Hate speech, what's that? Define that. Slightly racist, slightly sexist? That should be banned? Well, can you define it? And you said, look, who are you to tell me I can't say this?
That really went badly for the BBC. And that was an example of what I have said over and over again. They will not debate because they can't. They cannot.
They have to make up words.
Yeah, they have to invent things. There's so much line. All you have to do is just say, give me an example. Give me your best example. I mean, that's one approach. So Musk used that. And it just completely flummoxed the BBC interviewer, who was hoping, or at least as the scene was set up, he was going to attack Musk. He was just slaughtered. And I mean, it's like, I would say as an example, it's like, imagine Bill Gates, getting on an interactive Substack where the public could say a few things to him. And he could talk back.
Yeah.
I mean, it would just be like he descended into the lowest level of hell. There would just be so many attacks and they would be articulate. They would know what they're talking about. He couldn't respond. And then he would be driven to dust. They can only create the propaganda persona in a debated context.
Like Davos, right? Where it's all controlled.
Or Peter Hotez, I'm not going to give the anti-vaxxers the platform of a debate because I just refuse to in other words, what is happening is that you have the propaganda persona, and it is under attack now because there's enough people are caught on to the whole thing that they are demanding, that there's some discussion. And so we're just going to see more and more of this, where they are literally in kind of a personality enclave or a media personality enclave where they cannot come out of it.
These people are simply deranged. These the ones that are attacking. These people attacking like Riley Gaines, and you have the.
Those guys. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I mean the media persona. Yeah. They cannot come out. I mean, they will not come out, and you'll never see them again.
Let's go back to Riley Gaines. I saw the videotape. She's being assaulted. Then you have the vice president of student affairs of enrollment and management repeatedly commended the students for their protest and says, thank you to our students who participated peacefully in Thursday's evening's events. It took her tremendous bravery to stand in a challenging space. I mean, it's like, okay. I was listening to, what they do is, they invert everything. And whereas speech they don't like is violence. So therefore justifies them using violence to suppress your speech, and you're the one being violent. See how that works? I was listening to the Z-Man. He's a podcast, the Z-Man. And he was talking about one of the many issues he discussed in his weekly podcast was this guy. He has a weird, one of those typical made-up names, like K Jack or K Saw, Wilson or James or something. And he was a professor of film studies or something, communication or some BS study at Austin, Texas, university in Austin, Texas. And he wrote an article about it. He oversaw its diversity, equity, and inclusion program. And he was saying that those parents and those people who are opposing diversity, equity, inclusion, critical race theory, and all this other nonsense, they're guilty of what's equivalent of lynching. And he gives us brief history of lynching, what it is, like we need to know or something, his idea of what lynching was. And apparently, if you oppose these programs, it's equivalent of you lynching people. It's the same as, you know, basically, it's the same as tying a rope around someone's neck, putting them up on a horse and kicking that horse and letting them dangle there and strangle. That's what they're saying. He's saying, now here's the point that Z-Man made. He said, this is very important, because if they see this, if they see criticism of these programs and criticism of their of what the things they say and the policies they advocate as the equivalent of lynching, then any violence is justified in preventing it. So therefore, when a Riley Gaines shows up and gives a moderate speech about women's sports, how they shouldn't be destroyed by a bunch of trannies flooding it, or you go up and you speak against reverse rate, you know, racism or affirmative action, or some of these programs that are designed to make kids think they're evil because they're white, or transgenderism or pedophilia in schools, or books in schools that are promoting, that are grooming kids, sexually grooming kids, you are guilty of lynching. Therefore, violence is justified to be used against you. That's how you get this mob showing up. And what you're saying, although you're there just articulating an argument or presenting your case, exposing their corruption, that's violence. So when they show up and do violence against you, that's their speech. So that's how inverted it is. And that's how these people think. And what's okay, they're crazy, they're deranged. But the only problem is, you have the White House, you have various state governments, and the administrators of most colleges, universities, supporting this. It's all top-down support. And so again, it's that bio-Leninism. You have high, low against the middle. You have the deranged people supported by the system going against the normal middle class. You really can't make sense of this stuff. All I know is it's ruining their lives, it's destroying their communities, and driving their kids insane. You know.
Yeah. But I will just say that I think they, you know, even though there is a constant supply of new recruits from the deterioration in our neurology from all the toxicity, I think they're at diminishing returns. I caught some local reviews of the Riley Gaine thing, and it was just overwhelmingly supporting her, the public. I mean, the people who were in there were just this handful of activists.
Should the public support these universities?
Exactly. Well, they won't. Yeah. And the statement by, the administrator is just going to enrage the public all the more. It isn't going to gather a single clear-minded person onto that side of the psychic fence. They're not going to make anybody crazy with this stuff anymore. They're not going to gain any new recruits. The battle lines have been drawn, and all they're going to do is make the resistance stronger. When you have a woman being beaten up because she's standing up for her biological right to be a woman, and the administration is in opposition to her, I think even now there's a vast majority will support O'Reilly in her position. And so this is where they're at. They don't have any kind of concepts that they can use to strengthen their position. Their position socially, as I see it, will just erode from here, because they don't, what can they do? You know, I mean, they have taken all of the degeneracy to a point that is beyond where the public can stomach it. And now they are stuck with the degeneracy because they can never, you know, walk away from it. You see, they are stuck with it. And I think, you know, obviously we're heading toward a kind of political civil war. And, you know, when you look at, like, for example, what's going on like in San Francisco, where you have the insanity, the violence, the street crime, which is just horrendous, right? On what was once a great city, can the left hold itself together, or will there start to be fractions? I think there already is. I mean, the story I'm getting is that particularly the tech people that bought like $5 million condos there, they don't want to have to, like, you know, step over feces to go out and find that their window and their car has been smashed. So they've been classically liberal forever, right? Because they like drugs and pornography. So they thought, well, this is the right party. I think that they're seeing this whole thing is just, that it's fake and that they have to take over. I don't know what's going to emerge politically, but I know that there is transition going on. And I think that, you know, sanity wants to reassert itself. You know, I mean, you can be kind of a drug taking, high IQ tech guy who's had a lot of problems in his life and been liberal and voted for Nancy Pelosi. But that doesn't mean you're going to put up with, feces in your sidewalk and a busted Tesla, windshield. Mm-hmm. So, they've gone as far as they can go. And they've gone quite a ways. But it's time for, I think, sanity to reassert itself here.
Well, yeah, almost like it almost has to go that to that degree until it gets
too hard.
Because I guess you can indulge these ideas if the quality of life is superficially still good, but which you would get like in Silicon Valley and all that. But what's happened is that they've destroyed the social fabric. And the social the society's collapsing around them, and it's at some point, you have this. I saw a thing where the problem is, you can't work with these people because they're just deranged and they're liars. They don't act in any good faith anymore, and they're just complete frauds at this point.
Yeah, they're not capable of making a deal. Because they are, as you say, they're just, when you get, when you get the president of the United States talking about the nation's debt to its transvestite, transgender war heroes, I mean, I think you've reached peak insanity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you think that would be a symptom? Where's the next step? I mean, he starts bringing the transgender war heroes out to have press conferences with them. I mean, we've gone as far as it can go. And I mean, if you look at the polls, they're dramatically opposed to Biden at this point. He's a minority, even the Democratic Party. They don't have a candidate. The candidate that they have, who will just in fact bring all of this to a head even faster, is RFK Jr. Because he actually talks about, the vaccine as unsupported, unreliable, and dangerous. And he also goes after the neocons, which, man, is music to my ear. So he goes after the neocons for having bankrupted and having created these, nonsense color revolutions. He goes after the vaccines. if that message is given to the people in like Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, that are suffering with the effects of the woke left wing, man, I just think he's going to be catnip to these guys, and this will create some momentum to really break up the left, you know, into sane and insane components.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard. Yeah. But then I don't know to what extent even voting can be used at this point, because they fortified democracy. So it's like, I don't know. You know, who can be president? President? Well, I think anyone can be president. Joe Biden proves that.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about someone's electability and whether people support him or not, at least at the national level, I don't know if that matters. If they want him, they can create it, you know.
Yeah.
The key thing is whether or not how relevant the presidency will be in the you know.
Well, it won't be as it's the country's, you know, currently set up, but come the revolution, it could be very important. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to like reimagine our political relationship.
Well, I think Biden, the whole team is like, I think they're just sort of a demolition team because they're doing everything they can to stoke crises or sort of accelerate everything. Talk about an accelerationist, the Biden administration. Apparently they announced that they want DACA people to be covered by Medicare now. At the same time that the border's collapsing, they brought in millions of people. And to talk about this bankrupting the system further, is this really a time to be, you know, offering free healthcare to millions of illegal immigrants? You know?
Well, I mean, don't forget the $800 billion reparation proposal that California is trying.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Another plan. So, you know,
maybe Chicago should try to do one of those. I mean, it has plenty of money left over. So you're right. It's a demolition process. And I think what it smells like to me is that the dollar is really the target here, is that, you know, the funny money and the, you know, being put out by the funny politics. Just the rest of the world is what basically will restore sanity. They will simply say, you know, we don't want any more dollars. You guys are crazy. And now without the dollar and the power of the dollar, then you can have political revolution. And you know, of course, they are obviously preparing for this. But I do feel that you're right, that this is a demolition process we're in, a deliberate demolition. And I think that's why, I mean, you know, think of it in sequence, you know, with, you know, the pseudo virus, the pseudo lockdown, the pseudo vaccine, now the pseudo war and the pseudo, you know, financing. Boy, it sure looks like it's a process. And it's and what is coming out of it is the de-dollarization, you know, all these countries are like finding other ways to do commerce. So boy, it could happen. If it starts to accelerate, if it slides, you know, if you see gold at like $4,000 or something, which would be, that's an easy signal for them to control. It probably wouldn't be gold. I think it would probably more likely be oil because
I think if you look at the point of, why is it the Biden administration is pushing the tranny stuff so hard, or Bud Light? Having the guy Dylan Mulvaney advertise their product or having advertised for sports bras is just insane. It's repulsive. It's not going to sell product. So it is. There's another agenda going on here. And I think if you look at something like, you know, ESG with BlackRock, and this is a way they've said that they were not going to finance or provide capital for fossil fuels. You know, so they're depriving the world of its key energy source without a substitute, a viable substitute, all based on this bugaboo called climate change, you know, which is
right.
You know, they just state like it's a religion. And to them, it's a strategy, I think, for pretty much resetting the global economy. And again, it's a good example is this Biden administration announced that I think they want to 3/4 of all cars to be electrical vehicles by 2032, Well, that's ridiculous. There isn't, they don't have the capacity.
Right. I mean, has anyone worked out the arithmetic of where this electrical energy is going to come from?
Where's it going to come from? And it's this is a good example. What they've done is then you have the Biden administration using clean air rules to price out vehicles, gasoline powered vehicles. Because this isn't what the Clean Air Act was passed for. It wasn't passed to kill the automobile industry. They're supposed to clean the air. But nevertheless, you have these bureaucrats who are purposely reinterpreting the law so they can issue regulations regarding emissions that are unsustainable or unachievable, therefore make cars too expensive. Again, these people aren't acting in good faith. You can't deal with people who just willy-nilly change laws like this, change rules like this. Nice to have Congress to step in to pass laws saying you can't do this, but that's what Congress does. It creates these agencies that have effectively no oversight because they're the ones actually making the laws that matter. They call it regulation. But they're doing to achieve this objective, which is to destroy the automobile industry because of some great reset plan they have. And they have BlackRock destroying, using its domination, its holdings, its hedge fund, trillions they have, depriving. Basically, they want to get ExxonMobil out of the oil business. What? That's what they are.
I know.
What do they make toothpaste? I was like, what is this? And they don't think this through. Like, the power grid is already failing, hasn't been updated. It costs trillions to update it. Where does the energy come from to produce these things in the first place? And how about the rare earth metals that are required? Where do they come from? Well, they come from China. just a cursory examination of what their objectives are absurd.
Well, look at the sanctions that are still in effect, and they're trying to increase them. I mean, what have they achieved other than the deindustrialization of Europe, accelerating that, and forcing, causing Russia and China to grow stronger and stronger?
Yes.
They've become an unbeatable combination that certainly NATO would have no chance against. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting wake-up call. You have all of these, World Economic Forum leaders in Europe, right? And they are all on board the NATO juggernaut, and NATO is, all powerful. We need it to protect us against Russia. When the Ukraine and maybe Poland collapses, and you start getting real data on the millions of casualties, and then the Europeans can go, I don't really think that this NATO thing is actually as powerful as they're telling us. Looks to me like in a deindustrialized society, you don't do well in munition standoff warfare.
No, no.
So maybe we should look for another strategy here that doesn't include the neocon WEF types. So, a lot of revelations can happen. I mean, there we are on the cusp of many of them. The dollar's pseudo value, the NATO as a military juggernaut, and then of course even the possibility of real exposure on things like the Nord Stream explosions and things like this to really isolate the secret society. These things are possible. I know it's easy to be blackpilled when you look at the state of reality, but man, there are possibilities here. And the independent media has set the table wherein we have, hundreds of millions of Europeans that are now going, wait a second, this doesn't seem right. It's not real somehow, And so they could be open to these revelations and make the right political decision because of them.
Yeah, and the collapse of the American empire comes opportunity actually for truth to emerge,
Amen.
Because it's based on lies. So, okay, Joe.
Tim, great talking to you, brother. We'll get them next week.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.